I am Vladimir Solonari, Associate Professor at the Department of History, and you are listening to the Richest Documentary Podcast. Welcome to the Richest Documentary Podcast. Reaches at the regional initiative for collecting the histories, experiences, and stories of Central Florida is an umbrella program housing interdisciplinary public history projects that bring together different departments at the University of Central Florida, with profit and non-profit sectors of the community in order to promote the collection and preservation of the region's history. By facilitating research that records and presents the stories of communities, businesses, and institutions in Central Florida, Riches seeks to provide the region with a deeper sense of its heritage. This series will feature a podcast every 2 weeks, in the middle and at the end of each month, that will explore various aspects of Central Florida history. Today's episode, Launch Consoles, The Forgotten History, looks at the U.S. Space Walk of Fame in Titusville, Florida. Located at the riverfront, this 1,500 square feet museum is packed with artifacts from the space age. Of particular interest are the consoles used to launch missiles at a launch complex in Cape Canaveral. Murphy Wardman, a former General Dynamics employee, and Dr. Lori Walters discuss the historical context of these launch consoles.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to another podcast with Derek Hermannsdorfer. Today I am at the U.S. Space Walk of Fame in Titusville, Florida, to interview Murphy Wardman, a former General Dynamics employee who worked at Cape Canaveral for more than 30 years on the missile and space programs. We'll be handling material culture today, with the focus being control consoles, which Mr. Wardman brought from a launch complex up at the Cape and installed here at the U.S. Space Walk of Fame. Later we'll be speaking with Dr. Lori Walters to try and bring some scholarly context to the history of these consoles. Murphy Wardman is a man with a lot of interesting history behind him relating to Cape Canaveral, so I asked him if he wouldn't mind giving us a brief explanation of who he is and what he's done.
Okay, my name is Murphy Wardman, and I joined, at that time, Convair in 1958. I came out of college. I went to Indiana Institute of Technology, got my electrical engineering degree. I had come out of the Marine Corps. And prior to that, I had graduated from Center College in Danville, Kentucky with a Bachelor's of Art in Economics. When I got out of the Marine Corps, I decided to go back to engineering school. And I came down here. I was looking for a job. I was driving along the road, and there was a guy I graduated with walking along the road, and I picked him up, and he said, "You want a job?" And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Turn around." We drove back to Convair's employment office. I signed my line, and that was it. It was a great day, because I only had $5 on me at that time. I went to work at the Cape. When I came, the Atlas was being developed. And the first flight of the Atlas with three engines. Prior to that, all the flights were with two booster engines. The sustainer was not installed. And then when I came, they were, for the first time, they were going to try to go downrange as far as they could with three engines. And it was Atlas 3B. And so I started on Complex 12, and I was an instrumentation tech, an engineer. I eventually transferred to electrical. And when I did that, I eventually went over as lead engineer on the Atlas Centaur program on Complex 36. But I also, since we were such a small group and we had five pads, active pads, I would go to other pads and help. And so a friend of mine, name was Bucket Milligan. He was lead engineer on the Mercury program, and I went down there and I supported him on John Glenn's launch.
In an effort to get down to business, I asked Murphy if he wouldn't mind explaining to me what exactly these consoles were.
These consoles, since we didn't have computers, and we were only 600 feet from the launch pad, and the main reason is voltage drop. And so when we threw a switch, something happened at the other end. It wasn't like you go to the computer screen and you're playing a game and you do something, you know, that's not what it, this was, you have a true feeling of what's going on. So we put these in 1962. They were used for 69 launches.
Now being aware of what these consoles are, I asked Murphy how it is that they got here to the museum from the launch complex up at Cape Canaveral.
What happened was in 2005, when the program shut down, I got a hold of my young engineers, who are now big engineers. And I said, we're going to come out and get those racks. And they said, okay, what paper are we going to use? I said, don't worry about it. So we drove out there with a trailer. We went in, and the technicians were in there taking everything apart. And I told them, I said, I want these racks. And at first, they resented us being there. And then I said, you know, we're saving these for history, putting them in the museum, kind of got them enthused. These things weighed 400 pounds apiece. And to get them out, and so we took these out, we set them on a trailer. I put a tag on them, property of the Space Walk of Fame, and out the gate we went. And we brought them in here. Dick Sweat, who was another lead engineer with me, and I sat down and we rewired all these. And we started out, we had the prints, and we were sitting there and we were redlining the prints. And about halfway through it, I said, Dick, how dumb can we get? We're just throwing a switch and turning the light on. We're not operating anything. So, and we said, you're right. And so we went, so everything is wired, the switch, you turn a switch, you get a light.
Murphy had piqued my curiosity. With historical artifacts as important as these, how is it that they ended up in a tiny museum here in Titusville?
But we were at Sears Town Mall at that time. We had about 12,000 square feet. They raised our rent $5,000 a month and evicted us. And so we ended up here. Here we are, a little 1,500 square foot area for our stuff. We have a gift shop. And we just couldn't do it. There's no room for us to get a bunch of kids in here. So these racks, they're really an unbelievable part of history. And I might add, I don't think you'll find any other place you could go that you can go and throw switches on consoles that actually launch the vehicle. You can go out to the Space Center and they have an Apollo. It's got plastic you can look at, but you can't do anything with. Here you can come in, and believe me, the kids love it. They come in, they sit here, they act, they put on the headsets, which go nowhere, and they act like they're launching. They just have a great time.
I asked Murphy what, if anything, it was that these consoles could tell us about the missile or space programs of the 1950s and 60s.
Well, it's going to tell you that these are the same consoles that were used on Mercury. I mean, the same systems, basically. We controlled an Atlas. An Atlas is an Atlas. The only difference with these racks is that we're controlling the Centaur, which was a liquid hydrogen, liquid oxygen. So it was nothing more than just moving one more step. And we were taking the Atlas that was used for Mercury, and we're moving it into space.
I continued my interview with Murphy by asking him to sum up what the importance was of having this museum and having these consoles in it.
Because nobody realizes what this history was. You got to remember what today's mentality is. You got Xboxes, you got blueberries, blackberries, blueberries, redberries, whatever they call them, you know. They got cell phones, they don't have a clue what we went through back in the old days. Our computer that we had set in the basement under the blockhouse, but we used GE guidance in the first, which was a radar directed guidance. And we had downrange stations take over, feed it information, where you're going, what you're doing. And we eventually went to inertia guidance, and then we eventually got away from and the computers. But still, even when we had a system that flew by itself, we had to input into it the variables for today. Here's the wind, this is where you're going. You make up your own mind how to get there.
I concluded by asking Murphy if he thought the history here, in this museum and in these consoles, was being properly maintained, or whether he thought that it was being forgotten.
It's being forgotten, completely forgotten. And the kids that come in and do this, they really get inspired. I've had a lot of kids tell me, man, this is really great. You know, we tell them our stories. We're the only museum you'll come to, you'll get stories. You can go out to the Cape, and you can go through the Visitor Information Center. You can do whatever you want. You're not going to talk to anybody that worked out there. You're going to talk to somebody that was hired to show you around. You come here, and you're going to get somebody that was out there for 38 years, that lived through this part of our life, you know. Just like this room. This room is my life. This is where I did 38 years.
Next, I spoke with Dr. Lori Walters, a professor over at the University of Central Florida. She's written a number of articles pertaining to the missile and space programs and their effects on places like Cocoa Beach. So I called her up and asked her where these consoles fit in the material history of Cape Canaveral.
Well, it makes up, I mean, it's certainly a very important component. I mean, you have several components. One is you have structures themselves. So you would have, let's just say, a launch complex. And then, so you have a launch complex. So you've preserved a gantry, and you've preserved the ready room, and you've preserved all the support, you know, buildings and things of that nature. But all of you, only one piece of the puzzle. So in order to bring that piece of the puzzle to life, you have to have a representation of an Atlas missile at Launch Complex 14. Within the blockhouse, you would need to have, like right now out at Cape Canaveral, okay? If you look at Cape Canaveral right now and out at Launch Complex 14, all there is there's the blockhouse, there's the ready room, there's some fencing, there's the flame trench, there is the ramp, the concrete ramp area, but there's no instrumentation inside of the blockhouse. So you have one piece of the puzzle. So you have a blockhouse that looks on the outside like it did in 1962 for John Glenn's launch. But then as soon as you walk into it, it's been turned into a conference room. And that's because the instrumentation was taken out years ago. If you had that instrumentation, which would be your material, or you had a Atlas missile sitting at the pad, it allows people to have that next link to that event. So now I'm at the place. I can feel this is where John Glenn was in 1962. I walk in the blockhouse. If the instrumentation was there, I could say, this is the instrumentation which the people who supported John Glenn's launch, you know, were at. So that brings me more into the period and provides a better understanding, in this particular case, of the technology that they had in 1962.
Next, I asked Dr. Walters what she thought about the idea of these consoles as a piece of history that was becoming forgotten.
Functional thing. We easily lose that material, you know, the materials that provided these moments in history. And it is very unfortunate because it is one of the triangles of the touchstone to the past. You know, like I said, you have the structures, you have the material, and you have the human element. That material element is just as important as the structure. You know, so you have a house from 1850. Well, you know, big deal. If that's all you have is the structure, if you don't have the elements that were inside of it, you know, you can't interpret the past as effectively. And the same goes for something from 1950 or from 1965. with these, you know, the launch complexes. If, you know, so you have the blockhouse. Well, if you don't have the stuff that was in the blockhouse, you still can't convey that story to future generations. And those items that are in there are very important. And it's very unfortunate that most of that technology is gone. I mean, that it's been tossed out to, you know, a trash heap somewhere.
If you would like to learn more about the launch complex consoles or about the history of Cape Canaveral in general, I recommend you take a trip out to see the U.S. Space Walk of Fame. It's located on the river in Titusville, Florida. And on top of their vast amounts of space-era artifacts, they also have erected some fantastic monuments to the different space programs on the nearby waterfront. Thank you for listening, and I hope you'll join us again in the future.
Thank you for listening to the Reaches Documentary Podcast. Feel free to contact us with any questions or comments on the program that you just heard. Please join us for the next episode, The Winter Park Sinkhole, an environmental study at the Florida Sinkhole Institute.